Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Before we get started, I do want to thank our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by OneCause, the presenting sponsor of RAISE, the event fundraising conference. OneCause invites you to join them at RAISE, being held this year in Washington, D.C. on September 14th and 15th. RAISE brings together hundreds of fundraising professionals, industry experts and nonprofit speakers to share insights and network with others innovating in the world of fundraising. To join the community of fearless fundraisers attending RAISE and to learn more about the conference, please visit www.onecause.com/responsive50. That's www.onecause.com/responsive50. Good morning, Debbie. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before we jump into our discussion today, would you mind just introducing yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Thanks for having me. This is Debbie Baum, Director of Development at the James Museum of Western and Wildlife Art here in St. Petersburg, Florida, and also the incoming president of the AFP Tampa Bay Chapter.
Yeah, so I'm very excited about being with you folks down in Tampa Bay next week. Oftentimes before I come to visit, I like to ask the question, sort of orient myself to maybe some of the things I do not know or do not understand. What is fundraising and philanthropy like in the Tampa Bay area?
Well, I think it's fantastic. We have such a budding, exciting community here. Our arts is just going crazy, the art community. In fact, I heard a statistic, I think, that St. Petersburg is now has the largest number of museums in the state of Florida. And I'm not sure, I have to verify that, but that's what I had heard recently. And it's a wonderful close-knit community. The fundraising community, I've never met a greater group of people who are just willing to help each other, and that we know we're all here to help make our community better. So I think it's a great place to be, especially for young people. We've seen more and more young people come to the area and actually getting into the profession here, which is exciting.
Cool. So you and I connected yesterday, and we sort of compared notes on what we might would talk about today on the podcast. And you suggested a topic that I don't think that I've talked about in now 125 plus episodes. What's that big idea that we're going to sort of toss around a little bit this morning?
Well, one thing that's been very important to me is self-care, taking care of ourselves, making sure that we're healthy and happy. And a big part of that has to do with, are you happy at your job? Is it fulfilling you? Is it feeding your soul? Or is it making you sick physically and mentally? And sometimes it's a tough thing to have to look at, but it's important to reflect on it. And then perhaps maybe act on it.
Yeah, do you think the, one of the things that I've, as I've been sort of a fundraising professional myself, but also sort of, I guess you could say studying, made my career sort of a lifetime study of what it means to be a fundraising professional. Mm-hmm. Do you think we're particularly prone to not doing self-care particularly well?
I think so. I think self-care is important for any professional, but we know fundraising professionals often are overworked, have high demands, high expectations, stress is high. I mean, it's so important to take care of your mind, body, and soul, and there's many ways to do it. Fortunately, it's a hot topic right now. I Googled it yesterday, and there's like 1.2 billion results when you just put in self, how to relieve stress. So, you could bring in exercise, start to meditate, and still not feel well. And it just may occur to many that it's your job that's making you sick. And how you evaluate that, and it takes time. And supervisors may not like my message, but if you truly care about your staff, you want them to be happy and healthy. And if that means having a league or organization, then you need to support their decision.
Yeah, I have periodically, probably more routinely than periodically now, I say that I don't think fundraising has a fundraising problem so much as a supervisory problem, that I just don't think that that supervisors know and understand yet, because I think the profession itself is sort of still in its messy adolescence and it hasn't sort of totally grown up yet, that we don't know what the ideal supervisor looks like. Do I get a hint or at least a glimmer of insight into maybe that's where you would go to, is that maybe this is more about we've got to get better bosses in the office?
Well, you know, that's interesting. I think I always say that nobody's going to watch out for you but you.
Yeah.
And so our supervisors are, they're for the good of the organization. That's number one in their mind. So again, that's where their focus is. So it may not be truly, even though they'll say that they care about you.
Yeah.
And again, it's just what the intention is so important, but still their number one goal is to do what's good for the organization. So if you're still feeling that you're not well and you're not happy, you've got to look out for you. And nobody's going to do that but you. You've got to take charge.
Let's sort of flip that around. Let's say you are the supervisor, because I've been in the supervisory role, and I don't think that the last job I had before I got into consulting, I would say that self-care probably wasn't at the top of my list. There were other things that I was sort of driving for that might have been in my favor, but sometimes it's a supervisor that's just as quote unquote guilty of not taking care of themselves. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. True. Absolutely. That could be. I mean, again, another thing that I stress on is you just got to be listening to your gut. And it's because, and actually there's scientific evidence that gut feeling does exist. I think it was in 2016. The Psychological Science Journal came out that they were actually able to measure your intuition. So your gut feeling is telling you if you're not well, if you're not happy, if you're not being fulfilled at your job, if your supervisor doesn't have your best intentions at hand. And that goes absolutely. Supervisors are guilty of that themselves. We're human beings. So we're, you know, it doesn't matter what title you have. We're all experiencing those same feelings and those same intuitions and gut feelings.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if the work that we do. So one of the things I'll be talking about next week when I'm with you all is this idea that we can't get into the messy middle lane. And what I refer to as the messy middle lane is that sort of unpredictable, hard to put metrics on point in a relationship where the relationship with the donor is much less predictable, but generally has much more meaningful and significant outcomes. And I tend to think that if I was critiquing why self-care doesn't happen, sometimes I would say that it's the pattern of work that we actually do. I mean, some of us are so locked into, for example, our desktops, doing work, you know, highly relational people, but stuck in front of a laptop, that's not going to make for much self-care. I think you've got a lot of fundraising professionals running around who actually want to be with people and have a job description that says you're supposed to be around people and building meaningful relationships, but we're not actually doing it.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And that helps feed the soul for a lot of people.
Is
being with people, being with other people. And when they're not getting that opportunity, that will drain you. And that will, you know, you'll feel that effect. Absolutely. So, again, it's important then to reflect on Are you in the right place? Are you in the right position? If that's something you want, then, you know, could you get it? First of all, look internally. Is there something else in your organization? Is there a conversation you can have with your supervisor saying, you know, you see my skill set here, but I really want to spend more time with people. You know, can we make that happen? Is there a way that this other work that's preventing me from making that happen can be maybe given to someone else? Perhaps could we hire an additional person that could then take that work? Because I can do more for the organization when I'm out meeting with the donors, when I'm establishing those relationships. And we all know that, you know, that's just a given. It's just, you've got to have those face-to-face conversations to really make a difference for your organization. But if you're just stuck in front of your desktop there, in front of your computer, having to do that work that still needs to be done, you're not doing what's best for you. And when you're doing what's best for you, you're going to do what's best for the organization. Then that's when things are really going to thrive for both you and the organization. And when that's not happening, that's when you know something is off balance.
Yeah. So the message that I'm routinely giving lately, for some people, quite frankly, comes as, it's more of an awareness building session, I guess you could say, to put it, in its light, it's more introspective. So next week we're going to be sitting in a room of, I don't know how many members you have, but let's say we're sitting in a room of 55 people and we've got this guy who's sort of turning the mirror on us and saying, we got to be more introspective about what this is. Is there an element of that in what you think about self-care, that some of this is just our lack of self-awareness and understanding A, ourselves, B, the job description that we've inherited? Is that a lot about what's going on? Is that we have to, I don't tend to think that we need to know our bosses, our boards, and our bosses so much as we've really got to know ourselves, and we've got to make sure that we're landing in the right jobs.
Right, right. So, and that's a tough thing to do. A lot of people are scared to be introspective and take that look because you might have to make a change, and change is hard. But there's, you know, just some questions, some things you can reflect on that might help clarify things. Like, is it you? Is it the organization? What needs to be changed? So, you know, first of all, are you unhappy most of the day? Do you dread going into the office? Are you losing sleep? Do you fantasize about doing something else? Are you grumpy with your family and friends? Or when you speak with your family and friends about your job, is it more negative than positive? Are you venting too much? So I think that those are good questions, that if any of those questions are yes, then you've got to hone into, well, what is causing that distress? What is it, something that can be resolved? Like I said, first of all, you know, can you be a part of the solution, right? Can it be something that can be resolved if you want to stay in that organization? But it may just be that it's a toxic environment. And oftentimes, we don't realize that it's toxic because we come to normalize it. And I think we believe that maybe we can make it right. And sometimes it just can't be righted. And it's, again, I can't stress how important it is to be happy where you are, because we spend more time, right, and with our office family, with our own families.
Yes.
So it's so important to be in a happy, fulfilled environment. So, you know, then you need to kind of look and say, well, is it a toxic environment? Is it the environment I'm in that's making me happy? And, you know, a couple of signs of that, I think, is for me, negativity is toxic. So when you're around people who are complaining a lot, whether it's to you or it's behind your back, it has lasting effects on you. And being authentic is also very important. But authentic conversations can be difficult because sometimes they expose the truth that we may not want to hear. And that's happened to me when I've had you know, a mentor or a superior telling me that, you know, maybe your forte is in one area and it's not really the area where you think you're excelling in, you know, so you have to be willing to hear the truth also. But it's important to have those authentic conversations because in the end, it forces you to do things that will make you happier. So you have to know that it's coming from an authentic place and knowing the person who is delivering that message. You know, there's other things that can make a toxic environment, there could be underlying biases or prejudices or bigotry. You know, backstabbing, that happens in many organizations.
Is this?
So you just...
When I started fundraising 25 years ago, working for a small parachurch organization in rural southwest corner of Virginia, I don't know that toxicity would have been a topic that we would have had, but I think back then and I think, okay, there were probably some things that were kind of completely dysfunctional, right? Do you think we're just more aware, or is it because, I mean, the connectedness of our world, or has the workplace become more toxic in, say, the last decade? I mean, we're really talking about this stuff. Maybe it's not even the last decade. I'd say like last 2 or 3 years, people are like, okay, this is toxic. I'm out of there. I know who I am. I'm willing to be vulnerable. There's lots of sort of key words around this topic that are sort of floating around. And I think people are taking it seriously. And anybody who's not is probably missing the boat.
Right. Well, I don't think a toxic environment in the workplace is new. I think we're more aware of it and that we're both on both sides, we're approaching it. Definitely companies, and this is both, again, in for-profit and non-for-profit, are recognizing that productivity will be better if their employees are happy, right? And so then that creates this whole industry. Well, how do we make them happy? You know, what is making them unhappy? You know, things, you know, as far as providing, you know, meditation, you know, we've seen it for Google, you know, the meditation pods and the nap pods that we all dream of having, but nonprofits can't go that far. But they're recognizing that the health of their employees affects their end result. And again, although it might not be totally altruistic that do they truly care about the individual? No, they care about their end result, but it made good changes for the individuals because we're taking now a look at what it takes for us to be healthy. And when I say that, it means mind, body, and soul, because it affects all of those things. So I don't think it's a new concept. I just think it's being brought to light and that we're doing more of, you know, great conversations about how to prevent it, how to stop it, and how to make improvements.
So it's a difficult week to be talking about this. I mean, we've got the stock market, we've got the coronavirus, we've got lots of things that are creating lots of anxiety and worry and fear and those sorts of things. What does that mean in relationship to this possible underlying sort of dysfunctional environment, toxic environment? I mean, does this create greater vulnerability in your mind, or does it create maybe it creates a healthy tension in which to address some of it? If you were that supervisor, what would you be doing? I could think about how it could create that creative tension to which to remedy some of that. Am I right?
Right. And you just hit it on the head when you said, does it create an opportunity for healthy intention? And that's what it does. This is exactly when we should be putting our best practices in place. So you want communication, transparent, open communication, and constant update, you know, just give as much information as you have and the most current information as soon as you get it. And then you want to listen to your employees' concerns. What are they worried about? Assure them, you know, that things are okay. There's opportunities to work from home if you want to work from home. You know, just make sure to listen to them so that you understand what they're concerned about, what they're stressing out about. So communication is key. And again, that's a best practice that to prevent a toxic environment. So that I absolutely, this is a good opportunity to be putting all those things in place. And it's unsettling for everybody. So just knowing that you have support. And, you know, I know one thing people are, that I'm hearing around here is, I mean, we're in a museum and our attendance is already looking like it may be affected by this people's fear.
Yeah.
You know, what if that, does that get extreme, you know, for organizations who count on that, event spaces, et cetera? What does that mean? Could that mean layoffs? And so there's a lot of concern and stress out there. So it's just speaking with your staff and employees and giving them the most current information and the support that they need.
The only thing we haven't talked about, but it sort of occurred to me as I was sort of thinking, okay, did we cover all the bases? We haven't talked about the board members. What is the board member's obligation? So I'm thinking again to my last employee relationship that I had. And I think the board was kind of oblivious to some of the things that, I think even some of the board members in hindsight would agree that some of the toxicity that would have been going around in that organization at the time, they were completely oblivious to. What's the board member's obligation to this stuff? And how are they going to pick it up? Cause I mean, you know, the average executive director is not going to put a toxic report in his report, are they? So how do they get a read on this stuff? Does this mean that a board member has to be more present in a way that you almost have to be inside the organization and feel the culture? Right? I mean, you have to be present or something. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that before I let you go?
Right. Well, you know, I think if you see a number of staff members leaving a sign, especially, you know, in higher leadership positions, that could be a sign that there's, you know, a problem. I think talking to the executive director about what they're doing to what conversations they're having. And, you know, one other thing I didn't approach is it's not just a toxic environment. You might be ready for a new challenge. You know, if you feel like you can't go any further, there's no in that organization and there's no more opportunities for advancement. What's the executive director doing in that situation? And those are things, questions that the board could be asking the executive director, you know, so that we don't lose this valuable person. What else could we give them? I think, you know, you definitely don't want the board getting involved with staff. They have to do it either spend time at the organization. Board members can do that. They can stop in to your office and, you know, but, and they, you know, some, you can feel it. You can definitely feel negativity in an office or when you're speaking with somebody. Board members aren't going to delve into that. Hopefully they wouldn't. But again, there's some questions they could approach with the executive director.
Yeah. So next week we're going to be in Tampa Bay and we're going to have this group of people and we're going to be talking about this sort of stuff. And I'm going to be talking about because it is a culture. It kicks off with a culture conversation about what does culture look like and what drives that culture. And we're going to wrap up on this notion of the three lanes and committing ourselves to the messy middle lane. There's going to be, let's say there's a young man or a young woman that are 2 years into their fundraising career and they're picking up on some of this toxic dysfunction sort of stuff. What's your advice to them during the lunch hour? If I'm done talking, I've been running my mouth for 2 hours, whatever. Mm-hmm. What's your advice to them? If they're like, that's the environment I'm working in. I've got to go do something else, but I'm not at the peak of my career. I'm only 2 years in. What's your advice to them?
Well, again, it's you have to take time to reflect and look at the intention. Can it be something that you can help resolve? If you love the organization, you love the mission, you know, first of all, see if you can be part of the solution.
And
try that. Definitely reach out and get mentors. AFP is a wonderful place to find some mentors, and I am so blessed in my life that I have several mentors, and a majority of them I have found through AFP.
Yeah.
So, again, if you're not happy, talk to people who are way ahead of you in the field, and they can give you advice and let you know, well, maybe it's something that you can change. It might be you, maybe it's something you can change, or it's something in the organization. And then if you come to terms like, all right, you've tried to be a part of the solution, it's not working, you need to look elsewhere. You see if there's opportunities available, headhunters might even be approaching you already after 2 years, you never know. That's a sign that there's opportunities out there, and it might be a good time just to look, just be open to any opportunity. And that might also help you figure out, I really like where I'm at, and I can, help resolve these things and really grow this organization. Or it might be telling you, wow, I didn't realize that there's this great opportunity that would just make me happier. It would just fit me better. It'll get me on that path that I want to go in. So reach out to mentors, be open to other opportunities, and see if you can just help resolve things where you're at currently.
Debbie, that was a great place to wrap up. I've had your attention for more than 20 minutes, and usually we lose our listeners at about that point. I am certainly looking forward to being with you and the rest of the chapter there in Tampa Bay next week. If you've ever got a big idea or bold opinion, you're always welcome back.
Okay, great. Well, thanks. I enjoyed it, and I can't wait to have you come to Tampa Bay.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must-read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.